But when a cell divides, one of the cells is renewing, and the daughter, the other cell, can become a mature cell. So those are two properties. One of its progeny can continue to divide, and the other one can differentiate into many different cells.
Is this
the case? Do the stem cells bifurcate only in dependence upon external conditions, without which then they don't bifurcate, or do they bifurcate all on their own regardless of their surroundings?
If you were to isolate a cell completely from no external environment, it would die.
Mm-hmm.
If you give it minimal survival properties, it will survive but not change. It won't even divide. It'll just stay alive.
Yeah.
If you then give it minimal nutrients, its basic instinct is to divide. But it is very environmentally determined. And if you have to make the environment very neutral, and then it will self-renew, because the environment is providing the cues that tell it what to become.
In terms of when there's bifurcation, one of the bifurcated cells remains non-differentiated, remains a stem cell?
Yes.
Does that just die off, or does that actually bifurcate and then...
It's self-renewing. That will continue to divide. That's the self-renewing part. That's why it's called... That's a principal definition of a stem cell, is that it can continue forever to divide. But it's one of its daughters differentiates. So what we've talked about now is the physical process of cells that are being born and developing in the adult brain. And now I'm going to talk a little bit about how the fact that process is not fixed. It's not something that just occurs naturally, but which is affected by the environment. It's affected by experience. And what I can only talk about, because currently all of this work is done, and most of the work is done in experimental animals, we can't talk about an internal representation having an influence on neurogenesis. We can only infer that. But we can change the environments and see how different environments can affect the rate at which it occurs. So here's a picture of what experimentalists think of as enrichment. You know, so this is a mouse cage where normal mice are raised, and this is the quasi enrichment that is manufactured. If you take mice that are normally raised and they're from the same mother and split them after birth when they're already adults, they raise them together in these small cages, and then half of them you change into an enriched environment, and we're calling this, if you will, an enriched environment for only 45 days. And then you look at their brains and you look at the hippocampus. Normally the hippocampus has 270,000 neurons in this one area, and with 45 days only, you can increase 50,000 more neurons are born. So it's not a small number. It's 15% of the total volume can be changed just by switching experience. And that's if you're holding the sex of the animals are the same, the environment, the age of the animals the same, and genetics are the same. So it's just the experience alone that can change the numbers. If you look at a complex environment and you say, what is important about that complex environment? Is it learning? Is it exercise? Is it social behavior? And many experiments have tried to tease out or to separate out what's important. And remarkably, if we look at the number of new cells that are born in the brain based on different types of experience, if you look at 4 weeks of experience, you can, in this case, double the number of new cells by virtue of this enrichment. But just by having allow the animal voluntary access to a running wheel in the experience, just a repetitive movement, just constant repetitive movement. And they'll spend, voluntarily, they'll spend 5 hours, 4 or 5 hours in this running wheel, not really running, but just sort of moving on a repetitive basis in here, is enough to almost double the number of cells in the brain. Right. So, and so it, it's...
The activity is
voluntary.
The
pay of your
It looks like there's clearly a cognitive influence there when the neurogenesis is impaired, when you force the animal to exercise, whereas when it's not forced, it does it voluntarily, then the neurogenesis is enhanced. It looks like there's really a cognitive influence there.
Well, okay, I'll go to that right away. So what we did was we asked whether or not, we asked, is it the exercise alone, or is it, does it have to be voluntary? So if you put an animal on a treadmill and force them so they can't get off and they have to run, but you let them run the same amount of distance that an animal would voluntarily run in a running wheel. Mm-hmm. So it's the same amount of exercise, the same distance. Mm-hmm. The animal that runs voluntarily learns much faster. If you put them in a learning test, they're smarter. And this is something we've learned many times, is that physical exercise increases the ability to learn new information. But also, the animals that were forced running have fewer newborn neurons. In fact, they have a significantly decrease in neurons in what we call the distressed animals. So the animals that are forced to run, even though they have the same amount of activity. So it seems like in this case, the effects of running on neurogenesis and on learning are depend on volition. It has to be a voluntary act. Okay, so it's not just the physical activity itself, and the information before this was just to show that in fact the animals learn better if they have physical activity or they have this ability to do this repetitive activity. They actually spontaneously, just normal healthy animals will learn better. In addition, you can record in specific areas of the brain with electrodes, and those areas of the brain, in particular the hippocampus, is more responsive. And there is a particular type of electrophysiological activity that is enhanced or strengthened by virtue of this that correlates with neurogenesis.